A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been thinking about the same problem again, but this time on the tech side. He's dictating a rambling brain dump of a to-do list. Tasks mixed with asides, corrections mid-sentence, commentary that isn't a task at all, and he wants clean structured JSON coming out the other side. Call the accountant before end of month, sort out the garage at some point, and the system has to know those are two objects with different priorities, one with a date and one without. The question is the one that keeps coming up. Is this a fine-tune, a small purpose-trained model, or just system prompting on a large general model? And he doesn't want... it depends. He wants the reasoning that decides it.
The line people keep missing is that this isn't one question, it's three stacked on top of each other. Format adherence, judgment quality, and failure predictability. They move in different directions when you change the approach, and picking one means accepting what happens to the other two.
So the format adherence part, that's the one where a big model with a good prompt and a schema mostly gets it right, until it quietly inserts a deadline nobody said.
And that's the failure mode that makes this whole thing interesting. A large model prompted for structured extraction will hallucinate fields. Not wildly, it won't invent a task about booking a flight to Mars. But it'll add a priority level you didn't imply, or a deadline that felt plausible to the model given the phrasing. Before the end of the month becomes a specific date the model picked because it knows what end of month usually means in JSON schemas. That's not a parsing error, it's the model doing exactly what it was trained to do, complete patterns. And the pattern of a task object with a deadline field is stronger than the instruction to leave it null when uncertain.
The model is pattern completing its way into wrongness.
Right. And the maddening thing is, it'll get 93% of tasks perfect. You'll trust it. Then you'll miss the call with the accountant because the model decided end of month meant September 30th and you didn't catch it in review.
Which you won't review, because the whole point of automating this is to not review it.
So the format adherence question isn't really about whether the JSON is valid. Structured output modes have mostly solved that. It's about whether the values inside the valid JSON are faithful to what was actually said. And that's judgment, not formatting.
So let's pull those apart properly. Format adherence, judgment, failure predictability. Where does fine-tuning actually move the needle? And where is it just expensive ceremony?
Fine-tuning moves format adherence more than people expect, but not in the way they think. A fine-tuned model doesn't just output valid JSON more often. The base models already do that with structured output modes. What fine-tuning does is make the model's internal representation of the schema match your specific schema. Every field, every enum value, every optional versus required distinction gets baked into the weights. The model stops having to remember the schema from the system prompt. It becomes the default shape of its output for this kind of input.
So the hallucinated deadline problem, does fine-tuning actually reduce that?
It reduces one specific kind of it, the kind where the model is uncertain about whether a field should be populated and guesses yes because most training examples had it populated. If you fine-tune on examples where the deadline field is explicitly null, in cases where no deadline was stated, the model learns that null is a legitimate answer. The base model's instinct is to fill fields. That's what language models do. They predict tokens, and empty is harder to predict than something. Fine-tuning can teach it that empty is correct.
But it won't stop the model from misinterpreting soon as a date.
No, and that's the judgment part. Judgment is about understanding what counts as a task, what the priority actually is, whether at some point means low priority or just no deadline. That's much harder to fine-tune because the ground truth is subjective. Daniel's definition of urgent might not match what a rater on a labeling platform would mark. And if the training data doesn't capture his specific judgment, the fine-tuned model just learns someone else's judgment more consistently.
So fine-tuning for judgment requires Daniel to label the data himself.
Or someone who thinks like him, which is usually just him. So now we're talking about a data set of what, 500 to 2,000 examples of rambling voice transcripts paired with the JSON he'd have produced. That's a week of work just to generate the training data, and every example has to be his own judgment or the model learns the wrong thing.
And if he does that, what does he actually get? Better judgment, or just judgment that's wrong in a more consistent way?
Both, and that's the trade-off. A fine-tuned model will be wrong in a more consistent way. If Daniel consistently treats anything with a date as high priority, the model will learn that pattern and apply it reliably. A prompted general model might apply that rule 70% of the time and randomly diverge the other 30%. The fine-tune gives you predictability. You know how it'll fail because you trained it on your own judgment, and your own judgment has patterns.
Which brings us to the failure pattern question. Daniel's framing is that a big model fails by being quietly wrong in plausible ways, and a small fine-tuned model fails by being brittle when the input drifts. Is that right?
Mostly. The big model's failures are sins of commission. It adds things. Deadlines, priorities, sometimes whole tasks inferred from context. You mentioned your wife's birthday in passing, so I created a task to buy a gift. That's the model being helpful in exactly the way you don't want.
The small model's failures are sins of omission. It misses tasks entirely because the phrasing was slightly different from anything in training.
Or it splits one task into three because a pause in the dictation looked like a boundary, and the training data had shorter utterances. The brittleness is real, but it's also predictable. You can test it. You can run 100 examples through and find the exact phrasings that break it, then decide whether those phrasings actually occur in your dictation style.
So the question becomes, which kind of wrongness can you build a system around?
That's exactly the right question, and the answer depends on whether you're willing to add a review step. If Daniel is going to glance at the output before it goes into his task manager, the big model's hallucinated deadlines are catchable. He'll see call accountant, due September 30th, and think, wait, I didn't say that. But if this is fully automated, dictation to task manager with no human in the loop, the big model's creative additions are dangerous in a way the small model's omissions aren't. A missed task is annoying. A fabricated deadline is a missed commitment.
A missed task, you might remember. A fabricated deadline you'll trust.
And act on, or fail to act on and blame yourself. So, the automation tolerance is the first thing to nail down. If there's a review step, the big model probably wins on cost and flexibility. If there's no review step, the fine-tuned model's predictable narrowness starts looking like a safety feature.
Let's talk about the data question. Daniel asked what the labeled data actually looks like when the ground truth is his own subjective sense of what counts as a task.
This is where most fine-tuning projects for personal use fall apart. The data isn't just input-output pairs. It's input paired with output that reflects one person's judgment, consistently applied, across enough examples that the model can find the pattern. For Daniel's to-do list case, each training example is a transcript on one side and a JSON array on the other. The transcript is the easy part. You can generate those by talking or by taking existing transcripts and deliberately making them messier. The JSON is the hard part because Daniel has to write it himself for at least a few hundred examples before the pattern is learnable.
And he has to be consistent.
Brutally consistent. If sort out the garage is medium priority in one example and low priority in another with similar context, the model learns that priority is random. The training data doesn't just teach the model what Daniel wants, it teaches the model that Daniel knows what he wants. If the labels are inconsistent, the model's confidence collapses and it starts guessing, which is exactly what the base model does anyway.
So the fine-tune doesn't just require effort. It requires a level of self-knowledge about your own categorization habits that most people don't have.
And won't discover until they're 50 examples in and realize they've been inconsistent about what high priority means. That's actually a useful exercise on its own, but it's not free.
How many examples are we talking about practically?
For this kind of extraction task, the minimum viable fine-tune is probably around 300 to 500 examples. Below that, the model doesn't have enough signal to override its base instincts about when to fill a field. Above 2,000, you're usually into diminishing returns unless the task is extremely subtle. The sweet spot for something like Daniel's to-do list is probably 800 to 1,200 examples, assuming he's consistent in his labeling.
And what does that cost?
If he's using a smaller model, say a 7 or 8 billion parameter model, the fine-tune itself might cost $50 to $200 in compute, depending on the provider and how many epochs he runs. The real cost is the labeling time. At 5 minutes per example, 1,200 examples is 100 hours. That's the part people don't budget for.
So the fine-tune is cheap in compute and expensive in attention.
Which is exactly inverted from what most people assume. They think the compute is the barrier and the data is just something you gather. But for personal subjective extraction tasks, the data is the whole thing. The model is just a way to persist your judgment so you don't have to apply it manually every time.
Let's pull on the thread Daniel raised about text versus vision. He said text transformation feels like the case where the general model has run away with it most completely. Is that right?
It is, and the reason is structural. Text-to-text transformation is what these models were built to do. The pre-training objective, predict the next token, is already a text transformation task. Structured extraction is just next token prediction with a constraint on the output format. The model has seen millions of examples of people describing things and then formatting them. It's not learning a new skill. It's applying a skill it already has to a slightly narrower domain.
Whereas vision to text is crossing modalities.
Right. A vision language model has to map pixels to concepts to text, and the structured extraction is happening at the end of a longer pipeline with more places for things to go wrong. The text case is closer to the model's native operating mode, which means the base model starts from a much higher baseline. A good prompt and a schema on a large model might get you to 90% accuracy on text extraction. The same approach on vision might get you to 70%.
So fine-tuning has more room to improve things in the vision case.
Much more. In text, fine-tuning is squeezing out the last 5 to 8% of errors. In vision, it might be squeezing out 20%. The cost-benefit calculation is completely different.
Which means for text, the bar for fine-tuning being worth it's higher. You're paying the same labeling cost for a smaller improvement.
And that's why it depends, is the answer everyone gives but nobody finds useful. The real reasoning is, how much does each percentage point of accuracy cost you in the failure pattern you actually care about? If the big model's hallucinations would cause you to miss a tax deadline, and the fine-tuned model's omissions would cause you to forget to clean the garage, those aren't symmetrical. The cost of a wrong answer depends on what you're extracting.
So, the decision isn't about the model. It's about the stakes of the specific extraction task.
And the volume. If Daniel is dictating 3 to-do lists a week, the big model's occasional hallucination is manageable. He'll catch it. If he's dictating 50 a day, and they're flowing directly into a task management system that sends him notifications, the hallucinations compound, and he stops trusting the system entirely.
There's a trust decay problem here that nobody talks about. One hallucinated deadline, you start reviewing everything, at which point the automation saved you nothing.
The system's utility is the accuracy rate multiplied by your willingness to not review the output. If accuracy drops below some threshold, and that threshold is personal, your review behavior changes and the whole thing collapses. Fine-tuning buys you a higher accuracy floor, which buys you more months of not reviewing before the first error erodes your trust.
What about the small-purpose-trained model option? Daniel mentioned that as a third path. Not fine-tuning a general model, but training something tiny and specific.
For text extraction, that's almost never the right call in 2026. A small model trained from scratch on extraction task will be worse than a fine-tuned general model at everything except speed and cost per token. The general model brings world knowledge that matters for this task. Knowing that the accountant implies a phone call, knowing that end of month means a day constraint, knowing that sort out the garage is a physical task with no inherent deadline. A small model trained only on extraction examples loses all of that. You'd have to train it on a massive corpus of general text first, at which point you've just built a worse version of the general model.
So the real choice is between prompt engineering on a large model and fine-tuning a medium model.
With one exception. If the extraction task is extremely narrow and high volume, say, extracting exactly 3 fields from 1 million customer service transcripts where the domain is fixed and the vocabulary is limited, a small purpose-built model can work. But Daniel's to-do list is the opposite of that. The domain is his entire life. The vocabulary is unbounded. The task definitions are subjective. That's exactly the kind of problem where world knowledge matters.
Let's talk about the system prompt approach, because I think there's more mileage there than the fine-tuning advocates admit. What's the state of the art for prompting structured extraction?
Structured output modes have gotten good. You give the model a JSON schema, either as a pedantic model, a ZOD schema, or just raw JSON schema, and the model is constrained to produce tokens that conform to it. Not prompted to conform, constrained. The sampling is modified so that invalid tokens are impossible. That eliminates the malformed JSON problem entirely.
But it doesn't eliminate the wrong values inside the valid JSON.
No, and that's the limit. Constraint generation guarantees the shape is correct. It does nothing about whether the deadline field contains a date that was actually mentioned. That's still a judgment problem, and judgment lives in the model's weights, not in the sampling constraints.
So the system prompt is doing two things, defining the schema, and giving the model instructions about how to make judgment calls. The schema part is solved. The judgment part is where the prompt has to do real work.
And the prompt can do more work than people give it credit for. A well-written prompt for this kind of extraction should include not just the schema, but examples of edge cases and the reasoning behind them. If the speaker says at some point, or eventually, don't assign a deadline. If the speaker says urgent, or as soon as possible, set priority to high. If a statement is a comment about a task rather than a task itself, don't extract it. That kind of explicit decision boundary in the prompt can catch a lot of the failures that people assume require fine-tuning.
But the prompt gets long, and long prompts have their own failure pattern. The model starts attending to the wrong parts.
Or the instruction for one edge case bleeds into another. Don't assign a deadline for at some point might make the model hesitant to assign deadlines for anything vague, including next week, which is vague but definitely implies a deadline. The prompt becomes a set of competing heuristics, and the model has to adjudicate between them on every example.
Which is exactly what fine-tuning solves. The heuristics are baked into the weights, and the model doesn't have to hold them in its context window, while also processing the input.
That's the core insight. Prompting is asking the model to apply rules it's reading for the first time. Fine-tuning is making the rules part of how the model thinks. The difference shows up most in consistency across long inputs. If Daniel dictates for 3 minutes and mentions 15 things, the prompted model might forget the don't extract commentary rule by the end because the context window is full of transcription and the rule was at the beginning. The fine-tuned model doesn't forget because the rule isn't in the context, it's in the model.
So the line between prompting and fine-tuning isn't about task difficulty in the abstract. It's about whether the rules are stable enough and applied frequently enough that they're worth memorizing.
And whether the cost of forgetting a rule mid-input is high enough to justify the labeling effort. For Daniel's to-do list, if he tends to dictate long rambling sessions, the context window attention problem is real. The model might handle the first 2 minutes perfectly and then start extracting commentary as tasks in the third minute because the system prompt has been pushed out of the effective attention window.
What about the hybrid approach? Fine-tune on a few hundred examples, but still include a short system prompt with the schema and the most critical rules.
That's usually the sweet spot. The fine-tune handles the consistent judgment patterns. What counts as high priority, when to leave deadline null, how to segment tasks. The system prompt handles the schema definition and any rules that might change. This week, tag anything about the garage as high priority because we're renovating. That kind of temporary override belongs in the prompt, not in the weights.
Because you don't want to re-fine-tune every time your garage situation changes.
Right. The fine-tune captures your stable judgment. The prompt captures your current context. Separating those is the difference between a system that works for years and one that works for 2 weeks.
Let's go back to the failure pattern comparison Daniel asked about. He said a big model hallucinates deadlines or splits tasks wrong, while a small fine-tuned model is brittle to input drift. What does input drift actually look like in practice?
The most common failure is when the dictation style changes. If Daniel's training data is all short-focused dictations, call accountant, deadline end of month, and then one day he dictates while driving and the input is full of traffic noises, false starts, and tangents about the song on the radio, the fine-tuned model sees a distribution it wasn't trained on. It might start extracting the song lyrics as tasks. It might fail to segment anything because the signal-to-noise ratio is different from training.
The base model handles that better because it's seen everything.
The base model has seen drunk driving dictations, crying dictations, dictations from people who forgot what they were saying mid-sentence. Its training distribution is the entire internet. A fine-tuned model's training distribution is whatever Daniel chose to include, which is probably his best, cleanest dictations, because those are the ones he bothered to label.
So the fine-tuned trains on ideal conditions and deploys in messy ones.
And that's a solvable problem, but you have to know to solve it. You deliberately include messy examples in the training data, dictations with background noise, with interruptions, with tangents. Label them correctly despite the mess. That teaches the model that mess is normal, not a distribution shift.
Which adds more labeling hours to an already expensive process.
It does. But it's the difference between a model that works in a demo and a model that works on a Tuesday morning when you're running late and dictating while making coffee.
I want to circle back to something Daniel said about the vision comparison. He suggested text transformation is where the general model has run away with it most completely. I think that's right, but for a reason he didn't mention. Text transformation is the only case where the input and output are in the same modality, which means the model can use its own internal representations directly. It's not translating, it's reshaping.
That's a sharper way to put it. In vision extraction, the model has to translate pixels to concepts to text, and each translation step is a place where information can be lost or distorted. In text extraction, the concepts are already in the model's native format. The only translation is from unstructured natural language to structured natural language, and the model's internal representations are already good at that because that's what the entire pre-training process was about.
The baseline is higher, the improvement from fine-tuning is smaller, and the decision to fine-tune has to be justified on narrower grounds.
Those narrower grounds are usually about consistency and trust, not about capability. A prompted large model can do this task. It can do it well. The question is whether it can do it well enough, consistently enough, for long enough that Daniel doesn't feel the need to review every output. If the answer is no, fine-tuning buys him consistency. If the answer is yes, fine-tuning is a solution in search of a problem.
There's one more dimension Daniel raised that we haven't touched. He asked whether format adherence and judgment are actually the same thing, or whether fine-tuning buys one but not the other.
They're different, and fine-tuning buys both, but through different mechanisms. Format adherence improves because the model internalizes the schema. It knows that the output shape is always an array of objects with these specific fields, and it stops having to consult the system prompt to remember that deadline is optional. Judgment improves because the model internalizes Daniel's specific decision patterns. What he considers a task versus commentary, what he considers high priority, when he assigns a deadline.
But the judgment improvement is only as good as the consistency of the training data.
That's the catch. If Daniel's judgment is inconsistent, if he sometimes extracts a task from, I should probably think about the garage, and sometimes doesn't, the fine-tune won't improve judgment at all. It'll just make the inconsistency faster. The model will learn that the correct answer is a probability distribution over possible extractions, and it'll sample from that distribution, which is exactly what the base model does.
Fine-tuning amplifies your judgment, but it also amplifies your inconsistency.
It's a mirror. If you know what you want and you can express it consistently across 500 examples, fine-tuning will make a model that wants the same thing. If you don't, fine-tuning will make a model that's as confused as you are, just faster.
Which brings us to the uncomfortable conclusion that, for a lot of personal extraction tasks, the bottleneck isn't the model. It's the human's ability to define what they want consistently.
That's the thing, the just fine-tune it. Advice always misses. Fine-tuning isn't a way around the hard work of defining your task. It's a way of paying off the hard work after you've already done it.
Where does Daniel actually land? He's dictating to-do lists. He wants structured JSON. He doesn't want to review the output. The volume is probably moderate. A few a day, not hundreds. The stakes are medium. Missing a task is annoying, but not catastrophic.
I'd start with the big model and a really good system prompt. Not the default extract tasks as JSON prompt, but something with explicit decision boundaries, edge case examples, and the reasoning behind each rule. Run that for 2 weeks. Collect every output that's wrong. Categorize the errors. If the errors are mostly the same kind of thing, consistently hallucinating deadlines, consistently missing tasks that are phrased a certain way, that's a signal that fine-tuning could help, because the errors are systematic.
If the errors are random?
If they're random, fine-tuning won't help. Random errors mean the model is fundamentally uncertain about the task, and the fix is either a better prompt or accepting that some error rate is inevitable and building a review step.
The systematic versus random error distinction is the diagnostic that nobody runs before jumping to fine-tuning.
Because running it requires 2 weeks of actually using the system and paying attention to the failures. It's much more satisfying to just fine-tune something and feel like you've solved the problem.
Even if you've just made the same errors faster and more consistent.
Which, to be fair, is sometimes exactly what you want. Consistent errors are built around ABLE. If the model always assigns a deadline to next week as next Monday, and Daniel actually means sometime in the next 7 days, he can write a post-processing rule that strips those deadlines. You can't post-process around random hallucinations.
The decision tree is, try prompting first, categorize the errors. If they're systematic and costly enough to justify 100 hours of labeling, fine-tune. If they're random, fix the prompt or add a review step.
If the volume is high enough that even a 5% error rate means 20 corrections a day, fine-tune, even if the errors are random-ish, because the labeling cost is amortized over enough corrections avoided.
The volume threshold is the thing most people don't calculate. 100 hours of labeling at whatever Daniel's consulting rate is versus 10 minutes a day of correcting outputs for the next 2 years. One of those numbers is usually much bigger than the other.
It's almost always the labeling cost that wins for personal tools. 100 hours is 2.5 weeks of full-time work. 10 minutes a day of corrections is 60 hours over a year. If Daniel uses this system for more than 2 years, and he probably will, because to-do list dictation isn't a thing you stop doing. The prompting plus correction approach is cheaper in time even before you account for the fact that labeling is miserable work.
Unless the corrections erode trust, to the point where he stops using the system entirely.
Which is the intangible that makes this a judgment call rather than a spreadsheet. Trust decay is real, it's personal, and it doesn't show up in a cost-benefit analysis until the system is already abandoned.
You're both talking about this like the errors are the problem. The errors are fine. The problem is that nobody counts how many tasks they actually said.
Go on.
I spent 18 months doing basically this. Not to-do lists. Insurance claims. People would call in, describe what happened to their car, and the system was supposed to pull out the structured claim. Date, location, parties involved, damage description. We had a big model doing it with a prompt, worked great in testing. Then we ran it on real calls and the accuracy dropped to about 60%.
What was breaking?
People don't describe car accidents in the order the form expects. They start with how they feel, then mention the other driver was rude, then remember the intersection, then circle back to the damage. The model was extracting the first thing that sounded like each field and ignoring the correction that came 40 seconds later. He hit me on the driver's side. Actually, no, passenger side. The model took driver's side and moved on.
The failure wasn't hallucination. It wasn't tracking revisions.
The model treated the transcript like a document where the first mention is the truth. Real speech is full of self-corrections, and the model wasn't listening for them. We ended up having to add a whole pre-processing step that identified when someone corrected themselves and flagged the original statement as superseded. That got us to about 85%. Never got higher than that without a human review.
Did you try fine-tuning?
We tried. Made it worse. The fine-tuned model got better at the format and worse at the corrections, because the training data was all clean final versions. Nobody had labeled the messy intermediate states. So the model learned that claims are well-structured and self-consistent, which real claims are not.
The training data taught the model that the world is cleaner than it is.
Same problem you were describing with Daniel's dictations. If he only labels his best dictations, the model learns that dictations are clean. Then his real dictations, the ones with, actually, scratch that, and, wait, I forgot to mention, those break it.
How many examples did you label?
About 600. Took 3 weeks. The project lead was convinced fine-tuning would solve everything. It solved the JSON formatting, which was never the problem. The problem was that people talk in loops and the model wanted a straight line.
What happened to the project?
It's still running. They kept the prompted model with the correction detection pre-processing, added a review step for claims above a certain dollar amount. Everyone adjusted their expectations downward. The accuracy number stopped being the thing anyone cared about. What mattered was whether the errors that got through were cheap or expensive. A wrong date is expensive. A missing description of the other driver's attitude is not.
That's the triage approach. Don't try to eliminate errors. Just make sure the errors that survive are the ones you can afford.
It's less satisfying than building a perfect model, but it ships.
Did you keep any of the fine-tuned model?
No. We kept the labeling guidelines, though. Those turned out to be more valuable than the model. Once you've written down exactly what counts as a valid claim and what doesn't, you've got something you can hand to a new person or feed into a better model later. The model was disposable. The definitions weren't.
That's a useful way to think about the labeling investment. Even if the fine-tune doesn't work out, the act of defining your task precisely enough to label examples is valuable on its own.
It's the only part of the project I'd do again. The rest was just, I spent 3 weeks arguing with a claims adjuster about whether I was shook up counts as an injury. It doesn't, but the model thought it did because shook up sounds medical. You can't fix that with more examples. You fix it with a rule.
A rule in the prompt, or a rule in post-processing.
Post-processing. The model extracts everything that might be relevant. Then, a much dumber system, basically a list of patterns, strips out the things that aren't actually claims. The dumb system is easier to trust because you can read the rules.
Layering a reliable dumb system on top of an unreliable smart system. That's a pattern that shows up everywhere once you start looking.
It's not elegant, but the car got fixed either way.
I keep thinking about what you said about the definitions outlasting the model. Daniel's real asset here isn't the fine-tuned weights. It's the document that says, this is what I mean by a task. This is what I mean by high priority. These are the phrasings that sound like tasks but aren't. Whether that document lives in a system prompt, a fine-tune, or a post-processing layer is a deployment decision. The document is the thing.
That document is what makes the whole system maintainable. 6 months from now, when a new model comes out that's better at extraction, Daniel can take his definitions and write a new prompt for the new model in an afternoon. If he'd baked everything into a fine-tune, he's starting over.
The fine-tune is a commitment to a specific model at a specific point in time.
Which is fine if the task is stable and the model is good enough to last. But for personal extraction tasks where the models are improving every few months, locking yourself to one model's weights is paying a switching cost you're going to pay eventually anyway.
The final answer to Daniel's question, the reasoning that decides it, not it depends, is something like, start with the big model and a prompt that encodes your definitions. Run it until you have a catalog of errors. If the errors are systematic and the volume justifies the labeling cost, and you're confident your definitions are stable enough to be worth memorizing, fine-tune. Otherwise, invest in better definitions and a review step.
If you do fine-tune, keep the definitions document. The model is temporary. Knowing what you want is permanent.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop.
This has been My Weird Prompts.
If you want to send us your own weird prompt, email us at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.